What products do you clean your house with? Does it matter to you what those cleaning products are made of or what their impact is on the environment? Does how much they cost matter to you? It's an over $29 billion market and growing, expected to reach over $33 billion in the next 3 years by 2022. But what are so-called natural house cleaning products made from anyway? How do we know what that natural label means since it's not certified? What do experts say about how well they actually clean? Today, we're going to find out from a woman on the front lines of these products. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we bring you insights and tips from remarkably innovative women in energy, climate, and sustainability-related issues. I'm Joan Michelson. We talk about innovation, leadership, new technologies, and careers, always bringing a new perspective. Find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts and on our website, greenconnectionsradio.com, and through my Forbes blog as well. And please pass it on to your friends. If you want to gain insight from more women like me and our accomplished guests, join one of our mastermind groups. We'll help you with contacts, resources, strategies, ideas, and tips to save you time and money as you grow your career or your business, no matter what industry you're in. What cleaning supplies do you have in your house? You may not want to hear this, but your choice directly has an impact on both your family's health and on climate change. There are a bunch of so-called natural cleaning products on the market today. So if you want to be eco-conscious, how do you decide which ones to buy? We have an expert today who is going to help us sort out the natural label on these products and more. I'd like you to meet Kay Gephardt, Senior Scientist of Sustainability and Authenticity at Seventh Generation, the consumer products company that markets itself as a healthy and sustainable products company, where she is responsible for establishing standards of sustainability performance for their products. I guess that means she doesn't test them. I don't know. Maybe you don't test them. We'll find out. She's been at Seventh Generation for about 12 years, and prior to that, taught high school science and was in the Peace Corps in Uzbekistan, which we'll ask about today, too. There's got to be a story in there someplace. So Kay earned her Bachelor's of Science degree at Rutgers and her Master's in Physical Chemistry from the University of Vermont. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, Kay, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Super excited to be talking about cleaning products.
Good for you. So the Harvard Business Review reported in this past June, a few months ago, on a study of consumer buying habits when it comes to sustainable consumer products that, quote, products that had a sustainability claim on pack accounted for 16.6% of the market in 2018, up from 14.3% in 2013. And delivered nearly $114 billion in sales, up 29% from 2013. Most important products marketed as sustainable grew 5.6 times faster than those that were not. That's amazing to me. In more than 90% of the CPG categories, consumer product goods categories, sustainability marketed products grew faster than their conventional counterparts, close quote. So, Kay, consumers are indeed reading labels and buying sustainable products. But cleaning products are different because they actually have to clean and clean well. So how do you make cleaning products in a way that's both sustainable and actually cleans? What do you address first?
We address performance when we're designing cleaning products because at the end of the day, we want to make decisions that we feel are right for our family and for the planet, of course. But if the product doesn't work, it won't do any good for anybody. So we have to look at how do we create products that actually do what they're supposed to do in the home? And then how do we do that in a way that looks at things like using bio-based ingredients that are biodegradable or thinking about how do we get recycled plastic for the packaging? So when we think about designing for a consumer, it has to be both, right? It has to be something that will get the job done and also isn't going to have a really negative impact on the planet. And I think consumers are really becoming more aware that they have to think about the decisions that they're making, not just for themselves, their families, but also the generations after them. So it has to be an and, performance and sustainability.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the recycled packaging. So talk to us a little bit about that. How does that actually work? What kind of materials are you using and how are you deciding?
Welcome to the last painful year of my life, I will say. We've always had a perspective that you should use recycled materials when you create packaging, so PCR, post-consumer recycled plastic, and that you should create packaging that is recyclable. We want our consumers to be able to take that package and put it in the recycling, not in the trash. We don't want it going to landfill. The problem is that recycling infrastructure has not kept pace with the growth of the consumer products industry.
Not by a long shot.
So now we're in the middle of this plastic waste crisis where, as a company, we thought doing the right thing was to make sure it's recyclable, we source the right plastics. But we've got a huge issue and we're contributing to that. And telling our consumers, hey, just make sure you recycle it, that's great in practice, but it's not really happening. So we don't have recycling infrastructure. There aren't a lot of opportunities. And even when people recycle, there's not a guarantee it will actually be recycled. It could end up in the landfill as well. So as a sustainability scientist, what that means is that I get to have some great conversations with the company around we're doing the right things, but it's not resulting in the impact that we want. So I think heading into the future, I think companies are going to have to think differently about packaging in general. So plastic and plastic waste for me is top of my daily to-do list, which is sometimes actually really depressing. But I'm excited to work on it.
Well, I understand. I interviewed a very interesting woman who is at Ford, who is finding ways to make the inside of vehicles from natural products and natural materials. So I started the episode by saying the next time you get into a vehicle, you might be sitting on recycled plastic water bottles. But they're using potatoes and mushrooms. I mean, it's really cool stuff. So there's a lot going on in this industry in packaging now. It really is a bugaboo because we love these products, but they come in something, right? And the vessel has to be just almost as well thought out as the product. So I want to go back to the product for a second. So you talked about making the cleaning product from bio-based substances, et cetera, for example. So take us through as much as you can developing one of these products. I mean, how does it start? If you can give us kind of a little primer of taking us into your lab, if you will, on how you might create, say, your bathroom cleaner or something like that.
I'll use the example of laundry because I honestly am such a nerd about cleaning products that I find this one of my favorite products to talk about the science of. But you have to think about what is it that you're trying to get that detergent to do, right? And from a typical day, you may wake up and spill something really greasy and oily on your shirt. You may go outside and slide across some grass and now you have grass stain, dirt. Thinking about during the day, all of those stains that you pick up, you have to start with the actual building blocks that you need to clean that. So do you need a surfactant to get rid of some of that oily, greasy stain? Do you need enzymes that help break down some stains like you may find in juices or proteins or starches? Those things have to come together in the right recipe, the right blend so that you can tackle all of those different stains. And so we'll start building those up piece by piece, saying we need this type of cleaning power from this ingredient and this type of power from this chemical. But what's different is then we look at, well, where are we going to get that chemical from? And instead of sourcing it from petroleum, which is a non-renewable resource, we think, okay, we're going to get that from plants. We can get the exact same ingredient, the exact same chemical to do that, to have that cleaning power, to do that task that we want it to do. But we can get ours from palm or from coconut, corn, soy, wherever we may need to get that from, which immediately then gives us a better sustainability profile because we're using a renewable resource for that. And so we start to build things up. And then we take a look at it and say, are there things that you would typically put into a product that we decide we don't want to use because it may, for example, impact indoor air quality? And then we start to approach how do we create the cleanest, safest product possible that holds to the standards that we've set for seventh generation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. So how do you know? I mean, there's so many variables here, and we can't possibly know all of the effects of all of these. But so it's interesting. So you said you eliminate, you figure out what the chemical choices are to get rid of those stains, if you will, and then what eliminate the ones that you don't want to use because they are not environmentally sound. But do you then look at, well, but we need these properties from that chemical? I mean, are you creating new chemicals or are you just using what's out there?
Sometimes it's a mix of both. Historically, we've taken what's out there, the sort of tried and true, proven, things that work really well to get stains out. And then we work with our suppliers to get that from a sustainable bio-based source. In other regards, I think moving into the future, we're going to have to do more of that really innovative work to come up with some solutions, just like you mentioned before, with interesting packaging options. Collectively, I think for all of the companies in this space to solve waste issues, we're going to have to get into some new chemistries and new ways to think about things. So it can be a combination of both, depending on what we're trying to do. We were, and have been a small company, so we really relied early on with our suppliers joining us and kind of going on this journey to think about how do we take some classic chemistry, but to make it in a more sustainable way. So it's been a mm-hmm. long partnership, and that's why I think we've hit the point where we can start to prove like green natural cleaning products actually work. Because honestly, about 30 years ago, I cannot tell you that they did. It was not a great start for our industry.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, sustainable products tend to be more expensive than non-sustainable ones. For example, I priced seventh generation bathroom cleaner online, and where other manufacturers were $12 to $15 for two or three bottles of the product, seventh generation bathroom cleaner showed up for $16 for just one bottle. So how do you guys determine pricing? And do you find that people are willing to pay more for sustainable products?
People usually are willing to pay more for sustainable products. Something too, from a price perspective, we're not charging more for products and hope the people who are selling seventh gen products in stores are not charging more for that because it's a sustainable product. There is a legitimate cost that comes with some of the ingredients that we choose. So fragrances are a really good example. We use fragrances from whole essential oils. They're from plants, and that is more expensive versus something that's synthetic. So it's one of the trade-offs that we've had to really accept is that by choosing natural ingredients, in some cases, it does come with a higher price tag. But I think for consumers, understanding the overall benefit of that product and that investment in it gets you something that works well, but also is not going to be leaving behind a really negative impact for your family or the planet, is worth it.
Mm-hmm. So to that point, again, I did a little bit of research, and you probably won't like me finding this, but I did.
That's okay. That's okay.
Seventh Generation website invites people to check out the working group's ratings of your products. So I mm-hmm. did. And 9 of the 36 got an A. Very good. Congratulations. A few others got a B. The bathroom cleaner and the multi-service cleaner got D ratings. So what do you have to do to change your products to raise the ratings, or does their ratings not matter?
No, they do matter to us. And in some regards, depending on the product, the rating could be driven by an ingredient having a certain quality to it that actually isn't true when it's in the final product. So for example, I'll give you a sense of an ingredient that could be used for that deep cleaning by itself when it's not, in an actual product, it could be a heavy-hitting, slightly irritating ingredient. But once you formulate that into the product itself doesn't have that quality. It's a really safe, really gentle product to use. So sometimes rating systems, depending on which one it is, can be looking at, the ingredient itself and not necessarily considering overall how the product's formulated. I can't speak to exactly from a rating perspective with that one, what it looks like. But in general, though, we look at all of our ingredients to make sure that there aren't any issues that can't actually be taken care of or mitigated when you formulate the product. So when you get the product into your house, it's not going to be irritating. It's not going to, have any significant, impact for your family. So,
mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying, it sounds like medications, really. I mean, it's like your pharmacist is supposed to help you not take certain things together because individually they might be fine, but if you mix them together, it could be terrible. And what you're saying is kind of the obverse, which is individually a particular ingredient might be an environmental issue, but in combination with the other ingredients you're using in that product, its dangers might be muted. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a lot of formulation that goes into beyond just choosing the ingredient. It's all the combinations of the ingredients together and the levels that are used there And so assessing ingredients from their impact has to happen, but then also assessing the product itself and how it's intended to be used is really important. We do tend to be really strict when it comes to ingredient selection. So to your point about what you discovered, you're going to find very few products that would have, you know, hopefully anything other than an A rating on those. But we really do look at both ends of the product, the ingredients going in, and then what it's like whenever you, you know, have to use it in your space.
Mm-hmm. And that is the tricky part, right? You know, natural is not a legal term. It's not like certified, right? I mean, certified, you have to go through certain rigorous certifications. But natural is rather ambiguous. So what does natural really mean?
This has been such a hot topic, I will say, in our industry for as long as I've been with the company, because, yeah, no one had to really stick to a single definition of natural. Everyone could put on a product label, it's natural, this is natural, and there wasn't any definition for it. For us, we've always tied natural, coming down to being that, you know, bio-based ingredients. Those things that we can actually look at our product and say, for all the carbon that's in here, did it come from petroleum or did it come from a plant source? And we hold ourselves to really rigorous standards and use the USDA bio-based certification, which takes a look at the product and certifies, here's how much bio-based content is actually in there. That's how we've held a natural product, really have felt a natural product should be sourced from and not from petroleum. We layer on all of the other standards we have. For us personally, it means the ingredients need to be biodegradable. So making sure they break back down into things that can be used by plants to grow and then be turned back into ingredients, super important for us as well. So we always look for, sort of if you think about that circularity, something that's bio-based and biodegradable, packaging from recycled plastic that can be recycled. We really want to participate in nature's cycles and not disrupt them. So natural for us is this way of thinking that really is about circularity and how do we think about every decision and not disrupting nature when we decide.
Well, and obviously you're going into the water stream, right? So it has to not destroy the water stream as well, the toxicity. I mean, a lot of what's happened, for example, in the fashion industry is, and food manufacturing is, the processing itself, the development of the product itself adds toxic dyes or what have you to the water supply. And as we know, that's not a good thing, right? So you have to worry about the water impact as well, especially because your products are used with water, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I have to say we worry about a lot. So whether it's water, it's waste, it's greenhouse gas emissions. I as a scientist, have a great job, but a really stressful one because the number of things that I think about how we could potentially have a bad impact on is mm-hmm. can be kind of overwhelming. To your point, like it's going down the drain, people are using it, we have to make the product and ship it. To really be a good sustainability scientist, I think you have to hold all of those things, and it can be a little overwhelming sometimes.
Oh, I bet it's overwhelming. And on top of it, it has to have shelf life because it's staying on a supermarket shelf or in the warehouse of Amazon or wherever for a period of time. And so it's not like you can just make it from pretty plants and something. It has to have staying power, right?
Which is one of my favorite stories. Years ago, we asked consumers what they thought a seventh generation scientist looked like. And they told us they imagined someone that was standing in a field grinding up flower petals and putting it in the laundry detergent bottle, which is not the case.
Oh, that's a trip. Right? That's really funny. I love, that almost sounds like a little kid's image. You
exactly,
know?
Exactly. Which natural and green products. And when you start to talk about plants, it doesn't always come through as the fact that, no, this is chemistry. This is science, and it's right. Done in a sustainable way. So I think knowing the team of people in the lab and what we've got to do takes, you know, to your point, it takes a lot of good science behind it to make a product that's going to stay, going to work, going to perform, not spoil. It does not necessarily mean that I'm grinding up sunflowers in a field.
Right. So what I'm going to ask you a couple things and then ask you about you before I let you go. But what are the, and to your point, what are the innovations that are coming up? I mean, this is such an interesting space. And to be honest with you, I have issues. I mean, I prefer to use natural products for the environment, but most of the time they don't work. So what innovations are coming in this space and what innovations even can be coming? I mean, how do you do innovation in this space? What should we watch for?
I would keep an eye out, general across the industry, for concentration. I think we're getting past the days when people want to drive to the store and pick up giant jugs of liquids in plastic bottles and drive them home. I think people are done seeing water shipped back and forth across the country. I think we're going to see a lot of concentration happen in this space. I think plastic packaging, it has to be on its way out. I'm saying that as a not, it should be, but we really, really need to come up with some better solutions for that. That as well. I will add a personal point that I would love to see, that it is wildly unpopular, but we have such fragrance heavy driven categories. I would love to see us actually back off on that and get back to lighter fragrances and to really focus on that cleaning power as well. So I actually look forward to seeing overall, it feels like we're, as companies, kind of moving towards more and more and more sustainability. I think all of the big players, as well as small players in this industry, can't ignore it anymore. So once we collectively start shifting, we're going to see some great solutions come out that I think are going to address some of the issues, like you point out. Our products go down the drain. They create a bunch of waste. We're going to see, I think, a new era for products, for consumer products, that will, I think, ultimately be better for the generations that come after us.
Well, good for you. Just to clarify, by concentration, you mean, in effect, we would take home a powder and add water or vinegar or whatever to it when we got home. Is that what you're referring to?
Or it could just be less dosing. So you don't need to use, you know, two giant cupfuls of a product. You need a squirt from a bottle or a small bit of that to go in. I think we're going to see concentrates really show up, where you could dilute things at home versus having to buy all of that water and bring it with you. I think that's going to happen in the space as well for a lot of products.
Oh, I see. So it's either high dosage, so you use less of a product in the first place, or it's something that is a powder or something that you add water to, and then, you know, put it in your own spritzer, to use a technical term.
Right. I think consumers are open to making things at home to clean their house. And while we make cleaning products, we're never going to say no to some baking soda and vinegar being great solutions. So I think consumers will be more open to trying things at home. Simple solutions.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was doing research for this. A lot of times when I would do a search on natural cleaning products, the first thing that came up was vinegar.
Yeah, yeah.
And my sister uses vinegar. So a couple of quick career questions for you. How did you get into this work in the first place? I noticed that you got your degrees in science, obviously, as I said in the introduction. But what inspired you to even, you know, get your initial bachelor's degree in science, for example? I mean, what got you into this space in the first place? I saw that you taught science too, by the way.
I did. So when I was little, I was that classic cliche curious kid that was always walking around going, why does this happen? Why does this do this? Why? I'm sure I was really annoying, but it was this need to understand why things worked the way that they did. But I'm also a futurist, so I like to think about what's going to happen in the future, but how can we make things better and where do we need to go? And so getting into science for me helped give me a mechanism to answer some of those questions. And then thinking about, how do I use science? How do I use technology to move us to better? You know, how can we do good in the world versus just less bad? I will share one story. When I was younger, in middle school, I won the middle school science fair because I did an experiment where I built a city in a fish tank out of man-made materials, and then I set it on fire to try to figure out what would happen to cities if the temperature in this space really started to increase and all these toxic chemicals were being introduced, and what would happen. The tank blew up, like blue glass everywhere.
Oh my God.
But in that moment, I realized that I had this urge to understand impact. You know, in science can do great things, science can do amazing things and answer questions for us, but then we can use that knowledge to do things in a responsible way or an irresponsible way. And so it kind of shaped this melding of the two, of saying knowledge is good to have, then what are you going to use it for? And how do you do it responsibly? So it's been a nice fit for me to end up where I am now, where I can do something fun that feels really relevant. At the same time, I can help guide decision-making for good. and understanding impact.
Well, that's a great story. And your experiment almost sounds like the universe was pushing you into urban planning or something.
That's right. That's right.
Climate assessments and climate adaptation for communities or something.
Yeah. Right? Or, you know, maybe just setting toxic materials on fire isn't in our wisest interest as humans.
There you go. You got to be careful there, young lady.
Yeah.
So you've had an interesting career. You're going strong. You've evolved through this organization for 12 years, which not everybody can do. But what would you suggest to a woman in mid-career, whatever that means to her or to you, who wants to use her education, her experience, and her passion for making a difference in her career? She also wants to get ahead, make more money. She's ambitious. So it's not just go to work for a cute little nonprofit. Not that there's anything wrong with working for a nonprofit. But this is, you know, someone who is ambitious and wants to be financially successful as well. So what would you suggest to her?
My advice would be not to look at a path and think, how do I follow that? But to look at where you're at. Are you enjoying what you're doing? Does it, you know, do you have a passion for it? And then decide, what can I do here? What impact can I have? And then forge ahead. I think I've been able to progress my career by not necessarily looking at the people around me and figuring out how to follow in their footsteps, but to think about, what is unique that I can bring? What voice do I have that I need to show up with? And where do I want to see myself in 2 years from now, 3 years from now? Where do I want to see this company 2 years or 3 years from now? I've always felt very connected that my values and my sense of integrity is tied to the values and integrity of the company I work for. And that's made it really easy for me to think that we can both be successful at the same time. And I've just had a great group of people around me who've believed in me and who never let me apologize. And by that, I mean there's a certain point mid-career where I just stopped apologizing for being intelligent, for working as hard as I have, and said, you know, I'm capable and I can do this, and I'm gonna do it and step out. And then always be super humble and open to people's opinion when you don't necessarily go down the right path. So a constant process of change and evolution, but not thinking that you have to be exactly like somebody else to get to a certain place to have the things that you want.
Oh, that's great. I love that. So how do you know when you haven't gone down the wrong path versus just somebody is telling you an opinion that you need to ignore? I mean, there are people in our lives, you know, and as women who climb the corporate ladder, I spent many, many years in corporate America and name brand companies that everybody who listens would know. But sometimes you have people who say, oh, well, you're a fraud, or, oh, you know, you're not ready, or, oh, you're not X enough, or, oh, you're too this or too that. So how do you know when to listen to other people's opinions and when to just discard it?
I have learned that it's most important to identify whose opinions I value. So and also to trust my gut. I know that's cliche, but it's totally true. If someone that I really value and respect can give me feedback and I hear it and I go, I'm going to be a better person by listening to that. I'm going to be able to do better at the work that I've been asked to do. I will be able to treat the people around me better. I'm going to take that advice. But if I hear someone and who I may not be as close to or have as much direct insight to say something that doesn't feel right, that feels, no, that's not the path I want to grow. That's not the person I want to become, or that's not the way that I want to get to this thing I want to achieve, then I have to learn to trust my instincts, which I did not have early in my career. So that's taken time to say, okay, I think I can weigh what I'm hearing and then decide what's best to move ahead with, based on what my instincts are telling me, not necessarily out of fear that I will or won't get to a certain place in my career. So I guess it's taking all of that into consideration. But really, I have to live with my decisions at the end of the day, and I want to be able to go to sleep and sleep well at night. So I wouldn't take bad advice just to get somewhere if I thought it would mean I'd be further away from who I want to be as a person.
Oh, that's great. That's brilliant. I love that. And I think that's something that we all need to live by. You know, we have to figure out where we can make money being who we are, also, right? And some of us are lucky enough to end up in places like you did where you're valued and able to grow. But I think that sometimes if you're getting that feedback in an environment where you don't feel that you can grow and evolve or feel supported, or you're on a sinking ship, then, you know, sometimes you need to look at other opportunities, right?
I would agree. I've been incredibly blessed to have the freedom and safety. Safety is a big one for me. The safety to go to the people who have, you know, authority and influence over my career trajectory and say, this isn't working. I feel like I can do better doing this, or this isn't really satisfying for me. And it's not benefiting the company. I mean, there's things that we all have to do during our day-to-day job that we aren't, you know, they may be the bottom of the list of things that we like to do, but that's fundamentally different than saying my skills and intrinsically what I think I bring to this world isn't being used, or you're asking me to do something that really doesn't bring me joy and doesn't line up with who I am. So I think there's a better way that we can both benefit from that. I really do believe if you put somebody into a role and they don't have the right skills or don't have the right passion and enjoyment for it, you can't force that, and then the company isn't going to be successful. It works both ways. Both people have to be happy and getting something out of it. And if you're not being heard in your career and no one's even bothering to ask you those kinds of questions, probably not the right place. You need to feel like you're being listened to, and that it comes also from knowing who you are and what it is that you bring and not apologizing for it.
Oh, I think that's brilliant. Absolutely. And not apologizing is a big thing women have to deal with. So I could talk to you about all of these issues for about 3 hours, but I will let you go. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kay. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And if you need any cleaning advice, just give me a call.
Be careful. I might do that.
Absolutely.
So, sure. Thank you again, Kay Gephardt of Seventh Generation. So, do you buy sustainable cleaning products? Why or why not? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page, and find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, wherever you did today, or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, or on our website, greenconnectionsradio.com. And again, if you want to gain more insight from women like me and Kay, join one of our mastermind groups where we will help you grow your career with contacts, resources, strategies, ideas, and tips. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time. Bye.